Hi, this is Candace Michelle, and you're listening to KCIW, your community radio station. You know, we're in the midst of a pretty strange time. For most, probably all of us, our lives have been severely disrupted. The economy is in tatters, and the acrimony between the left and the right has become so intense that civility and empathy seem to no longer have a place in our interactions with each other. The great divide between us and them seems to just keep growing wider, fueled by anger and fear on both sides. The logical result is a community further divided, further alienated from anyone not in our own tribe, and increasingly fragile. We're each convinced that our perception of reality is the truth, and therefore anyone who doesn't share it is just plain wrong. But like a giant beach ball made up of unlimited slices of color, what you see all depends on where you're standing. My hope is that this show can help all of us see the other colors by first being willing to entertain the possibility that they exist and learn that there might be some worth in listening to a perspective different than our own. I believe that willingness to include all of us in the discussion will lead to a stronger, more resilient community, something we all want and need. Please join me for my conversations with Brookings Mayor Jake Pieper, a new series called Building Bridges. And welcome back to another episode of Building Bridges, a weekly show that Brookings Mayor Jake Pieper and I do in the hopes of bridging some of the rifts in our community by first doing it ourselves. Jake and I hold very different beliefs and are probably about as polar opposite as two people can be. But we found through talking things out that we actually agree on quite a bit more than we originally thought and hold some of the same things dear, like appreciation of the beauty, the place that we live, our concern for our community, and a commitment to integrity and honesty. So, coming from that space, how you doing, Jake?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing good.
Yeah. How was your week so far?
My week was all right. You know, busy, and not as much time in the evening. You notice how much sooner it seems to be getting stinking dark.
Oh, not seems, honey. Not seems.
Yeah.
It is getting stinking dark.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're taping this at 7:15 on Wednesday night, and I'm looking out my front window, and it's dark.
Yeah, like dark.
Dark. It's 7:15.
I know.
Yeah. And I'm just not made for the dark. I'm really one of those people that likes the light.
The light.
Yes.
That's all right. And that's a good person to be, liking the light.
You know, it makes winter difficult.
Yeah.
Summer's great, but winter can get a little bit chancy. Yeah.
Yeah, it happens though.
You get busy this time of year though, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, my busiest time is fall and winter, you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess in some ways, a lot of times I'm busy enough now this time of year where I don't necessarily feel like doing anything after work.
Right.
So I guess that's nice because I'm losing all my daylight now. But even if I wanted to do something after work, it's like, you know, I might have 45 minutes
to go on that really quick hike all the way up to the top and back down again. Right? Yeah. It's not going to happen. I know. And like, really, you can't actually go on a hike, you know, because it's dark.
Yeah.
You can't see anything. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
And the weather today was not, man, it was cold out there.
It was a little chilly.
Yeah. I just released another butterfly. Actually, I think I released two of them yesterday, but one of them has not moved. Basically since I released it, which was over 24 hours ago. And I'm starting to get a little worried, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be a sign for something.
Well, it's a sign that the butterfly does not like how cold it is.
You know,
because
that makes sense.
They are cold-blooded and have to actually sit in the sun and absorb that warmth in order to fly. Otherwise, they are stationary.
And I'm starting to feel like I should maybe bring the guy in, back in, because he'll let me pick him up. I'm sure he's not moving, and like keep him overnight. And maybe Holly makes this great nectar that you can feed the butterflies with and stuff. And I don't like actually going to those extremes, but poor butterfly.
Yeah. Just hanging out, huh?
I know. Yeah. Not really able to motivate out of here because it's not warm enough. And from what I see in the weather report, we've got huge storm coming. Did you see that?
Yeah. It's supposed to rain. It's supposed to rain for sure.
It's like they said it was a river.
Yeah. The whole, what are they, atmospheric river, I think is what they call it.
Yes. That somehow has pulled in the remnants of a tropical storm.
So, oh, right on. Yeah. We'll take the leftovers there. Tropical storm.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2020. What else can possibly? Yeah. No. Stop with that word. Don't even say it. Oh, well, it's good to see you again.
Yeah.
And I do get to see you because we're doing this kind of like a Zoom thing, just in case the listeners want to know this. So we actually can see each other's faces, which is really neat, even though we're nowhere near each other. I'm in my home and Jake is in his home.
Right.
So.
Right. But still being able to see each other. That means something. Yeah. And it is good to see. I look forward to these.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And I saw you actually in the flesh today. I was out driving and I was on railroad and you were getting into your truck or getting out of your truck or something. And I just thought, there's Jake.
There's that Jake. Let's see.
Jakey guy.
was there a natural reaction to let a single finger grow or anything?
Absolutely not. Good. Isn't that remarkable?
Good. Yeah.
Amazing how things change in 9 months.
I'm surprised I didn't notice you. I usually notice who's passing me and who
I didn't beep or anything or wave or any of that stuff, so you know I did not draw attention to myself as it were. All right, well, for the past few weeks we've been talking about representative government and what that means and how it works, and the city of Brookings operates somewhat differently. The people we elect to city council are there to govern the city rather than to represent the population. Do I have that even vaguely correct? Sort of.
I mean, obviously any governing body should be representing their constituents, constituency.
Right.
So
I mean, right.
Who would ever say that? But it's just it's different. It's different than a lot of kind of what I hear. That whole representative government and the people's house and a city councilor or a mayor is a representative. That's what we are. We're representatives, and we come and sit at this table, each of us representing our own like constituency, and we arrive at a decision.
And that's not the way it is.
No, it's a whole different type of governance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just all of this stuff that we have in common that we all pay for. I mean, who's going to watch it? You know, so
right.
We get together and choose a group of people to watch it and to run it.
Right. So, and that makes perfect sense to me. But it does kind of beg the question, if you've got a city council that's made up of primarily the same people, I mean, the same type of people, the same values and the same, I won't call you, you know, cookie cutters. But you know, generally the same ideology, and if that's what your city council is made up of, then how do the people how do people who have different ideas get their ideas heard? How do they get, or how do you, as the governors of the town, get to hear those ideas, which may actually, you know, prove to be valuable or, you know, help to solve a problem or whatever?
Well, we do hear them typically. I mean, or, you know, they're told to us or they're shared with us. Whether or not we always, you know, hear is a whole nother thing. But,
right.
You know, there's still plenty of public participation from different sorts of people. I'm still thinking about the cookie cutter thing. So hang on, I gotta catch up.
Well, no, go ahead. Take that and run.
Well, what's striking to me is I made that same comment to somebody just today. Actually, we were talking about the council campaign and the different candidates, and I threw that out there that, you know, just another kind of run of the mill. I use that term, run of the mill. You know, just another like run of the mill conservative white dude sitting up there.
Funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just going to put this little aside in here because it keeps striking me. So on your chat the other night, you were talking about you thought your heritage was Germanic.
Oh, yeah.
German, right? And yeah. And that is my heritage. So yeah. It's really...
You sure?
No, I'm not. Exactly. I'm not. But I just find it funny. There just seem to be these little things that happen that you have a thought and I have that same kind of thought.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I'm just saying. Stay in your own side, Jake.
Yeah. Pinging the weirdo button, huh? Yeah.
Right? So go ahead.
Cookie cutter, run of the mill. I mean, believe it or not, I mean, we're not, just because you're Caucasian and a Republican, we're not all the exact same, you know, and just like you and yours, whatever team you're on, or, you know, it's, you're not all the same, not all the exact same.
Right.
So after the cookie cutter thing, let's see, what did you ask me? How the other ideas are heard.
Right.
And how they would, yeah.
And really, are they given value? You know, because as you said, you know, you may actually physically hear them, but that doesn't mean that you hear them, you know, and give them weight. And it would seem like if good governance were truly was the goal, then you'd want to hear as many perspectives as possible, because you'd know that there is no, you know, one single road, right?
Right, right. Starting with there's five people, and so you do normally hear from, you know, five different perspectives and oftentimes five different opinions. Mm-hmm. So when you add people into that, you add the public into that, and get to hear an assortment of opinions and ideas. It's no different, Candace, than if you're doing something. You've been on boards and you were on TPAC and stuff, and so you have your opinion in your mind and you hear other opinions.
To be fair, there was a lot of diversity on TPAC. I mean,
oh yeah,
old, right. Young men, women, crabby conservatives. And
no, I mean, like you personally, because at the end of the day, I'm just another person. I'm another human being, and I hear people's opinions the same way you do. And okay. there's five of us sitting up at the councils. So, you know, individually, we hear differing opinions, and, you know, whether like more weight is given to one or the other, you know, I can say that when I hear differing opinions, I do sometimes give more weight to one opinion over another.
Based on who it comes from?
Sometimes I would imagine. I can't think of an example, but sure. Right. I mean, the messenger, right. Even though if it's just kind of an exchange of information and it's a right. good, sound, logical argument based in logic and fact and reason, it shouldn't matter who it comes from, right?
Right.
But that weighs into it. Mm-hmm. But I hear opinions, you know, ones that that don't carry the weight with me is when they are obvious, just kind of a misinformed or have some serious factual errors. And it's just, you know, their opinion is undoable. Something they want us to do is just undoable.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yep. Okay. You know, that's fair.
I know that our conversation usually always goes to like Democrat and Republican, but it's as far as the council, like how we take and hear public comment on a normal ongoing basis, you know, setting aside the few issues that have come up, maybe more than a few that seem kind of starkly like you know, almost partisan. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it's obvious a group of the public that are Democrats, you know, and so it is kind of divided that way. But most of the time, day in and day out, meeting in, meeting out, we hear opinions here from the public, and the Republican and Democrat thing typically is not really the issue.
Would it be more accurate to talk in terms of conservative and progressive or liberal?
Most of the
I agree. I don't think there's a lot of talk about Republicans versus Democrats. I mean, I don't hear a lot of talk about that in right. city council, but I would say that it seems pretty clear that the majority of the city council is pretty conservative.
Conservative, yeah. There's a lot of what we do that doesn't have anything to do with liberal or conservative. Okay. I mean, you know, but the more like hot topic, hot button issues, homelessness probably, you know, is one that by and large, at least from my perspective, it seems to be that conservatives are typically kind of less homeless advocacy type folks and, right. and, you know, people that do advocate for the homeless or unhoused tend to be more on the liberal side.
But there must be, I keep getting, I guess, tripped up by the labels, because, you know, when I look at myself, I feel like I am socially progressive, but I am fiscally very conservative. I mean, if being fiscally conservative means I don't want to spend money I don't have, and I don't know if that's the definition of fiscal conservative, actually. I have no idea.
Right.
But I assumed that it was.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone I've ever met that hasn't claimed to be a fiscal conservative. You know, it's something that, I mean, we all claim it. I claim it. You claim it. Both major political parties, you know, I mean, the Republicans, you know, being conservative and being financially conservative, fiscal conservative, when I look at the longevity of the Republican Party, and, you know, they've been in power, then they're out of power, then they come back in power, there's still a growing of national debt. And, you know, it would seem to me that for the last 100 years, or at least the last 50 years, fiscally conservatives haven't been running things. I mean, our country hasn't gone the way of fiscal conservation.
Right, right.
I don't think.
No, I agree. Well, so when I was growing up, and this was in the 50s and 60s, so that was like 20 million years ago for you.
yeah.
You weren't even a spark.
I'm not sure my folks were even sparks yet. No, they were. I'm just kidding.
Oh, ouch.
I'm just kidding.
I've earned every one of these wrinkles. Yeah. My family was, it was a Democratic household. My father and mother were both Democrats, and they voted the Democratic ticket. My father probably would kind of be a little bit more, let's see who's running first. But my mother was a straight Democrat. But our next door neighbors were Republicans and good friends. And, you know, we all socialized and played together and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And there was no division, you know. I mean, politically there was, but that wasn't just such a small part of our lives that it really didn't mean a whole lot. But when I was growing up, the Democrats, that party stood for things like, they were the blue collar workers. They were the union organizers. They were the immigrants. They were the bottom of the pile, I guess.
Yeah, blue collar. Yeah,
right. And the Republican Party, as typified by my next door neighbor, who was an attorney, were the white collar professionals and the managers and the coal mining owners. And, you know, that was the way things kind of were portioned out. Was it like that for you? Because I, you know, you grew up a few years after me. Many years after me, because you're still a whippersnapper.
Right. So, no, it wasn't like that. And I mean, you can agree that the Democrat Party has changed in the last 40, 50 years, right?
Yeah, although how and where it did that,
things just evolved. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the Republicans have too. You know, so the idea of, you know, Democrats, you know, the blue collar party, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not totally sure, but my grandparents on one side, they were like, you know, like small dairy farmers in stinking Minnesota. I'm sure they were Democrats. And on the other side, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they were Democrats, but the party is just a lot different now.
Well, I'll tell you, my grandfather was a dairy farmer, and my grandmother was married to him, and he was a Republican and she was a Democrat. Like, I never did understand that. He certainly was not part of the owner class, you know, if there are classes, you know, he was, he worked hard every day of his life. I mean, I think when he was 93, he was still out in the field plowing, you know, that he's a farmer, you know?
So. Yeah. And so how you described it, I mean, I've heard that from a lot of folks, how they would have described it. So, how would you kind of give that same like synopsis of them today? How would you describe the Democratic Party today? Wow. Using those same sort of terms?
I would say that Democrats are still champions of the underdog. That would still ring true to me today. And are concerned with making sure that people have a basic threshold for being able to live, you know, enough money so that they have a place to live and you know, food and can clothe their children. So that's where I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could agree with that. Still the underdog or, looking after the proletariat, you know. How would you describe the Republican Party today? Still, I mean, would you use this?
I
the
would
same?
Not use. I would not use glowing terms as of right now.
No, but I mean the same as 1955. You would describe them the same.
No, it to me, I think it has kind of. I think that maybe the ruling class. I could be. I have actually. I just erase that part because I don't actually know that. I would say that if I were to take a guess, I would guess that the majority of the money is in Republican hands. That's personal wealth. That's
I see what you're saying.
That's what I would guess, and I could be way crazy wrong, but that is my sense that that's where the wealth is concentrated, and they don't want to lose their wealth, and so they're going to protect, right, and not their concern is less for the welfare of the society as a whole and more for the welfare of the individual, I guess. What do you think? Because I could be way wrong.
That wealth concentration, that's an interesting thing. I'm surprised that, you know, that's not, I don't have a bell going off in my head to be able to answer that. Like, I would think that would be a sound bite on a lot of news programs or a lot of commentaries. But yeah, I don't know. As far as
like, on the other hand, maybe the wealthy are neither, because they actually have all the power and don't need it, right? They don't need either one of the parties. Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're figuring it out. I was trying to make my own like description of. You know, the two big teams and the two parties and kind of who they're rooting for. I would agree that the Democratic Party definitely seems to be more concerned with the lower class, you know, financial economic class of folks in the country, you know, the proletariat. Republicans, I still see Republicans as being a bit more like pro-business, you know, probably. So this, the same, that whole business owner, you know, entrepreneurial type thing.
Right.
And then, so you mentioned that you're social progressive. So what does that mean exactly to you?
Would like for everybody to have a living wage. You know, I would like a living wage guaranteed so that people are not born into poverty and have to stay there because of circumstances, but actually have the ability to have a decent roof over their heads and a decent diet. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not being fed mac and cheese because it's cheap, and decent health care, and that when people get to be my age, Social Security is still there to see us through our sunset years. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
So and you know, and I think people should be able to love who they want to love and marry who they want to marry. And I mean, you know, I mean, I really, I am. Yeah, I just, I, yes. Probably a whole lot more. But, you know, I believe in the intrinsic worth of every human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that worth should be given every opportunity to succeed and flourish, each one of them, each one of us.
Yeah. I don't quite have my opinion cemented for, the livable wage or a universal minimum wage yet. You know, it doesn't,
You're still young.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. I'm young. You let me forget for a minute.
Yeah. You're just a baby.
Oh, that's funny. You an idea of a minimum wage as a matter of principle doesn't really fit. It doesn't fit it for me. But
can you tell me why it doesn't fit? Because I don't understand that.
Because it, as far as wage and wage earned, you know, we're not all created equal. So when I was a really, really, really young man and I got a job and I got on at, you know, minimum wage and the person next to me got on at minimum wage and, you know, there was came the time that I was looking, you know, I thought I was doing pretty well and I was kind of like looking for another 50 cents an hour. And, you know, it just, it doesn't work when the playing field is just completely level and needs to stay level like that. To a small business person, like I am today, or like the little sandwich shop that I was working for when I was a kid. I mean, they literally just couldn't, they couldn't afford that. If they've got to pay this person $7.50 an hour, they got to pay me $7.50 an hour. I'm getting better at making sandwiches. It'd be cool if I could go up to $8 an hour. But the next kid that they just hired, they're still having to pay $7.50 an hour. And so I got it. It doesn't, as one that is, you know, halfway like competitive and I'm okay competing for things. And I feel like I have something to offer and I can work hard and I want to excel. And, leveling the keeping things level or leveling thing doesn't really fit for me.
Well, tell me how, because I'm not sure I see where you would have to be kept at minimum wage if your skill set was better. The minimum wage is meant as the floor, you know, that you have to be able to make $7.50 an hour because that's just the absolute minimum that you have to be able to make in order to exist. Mm-hmm. But I don't see how that impacts you getting a raise if your work is better and if you're more productive. And I mean, I don't quite see that.
So in my experience of small business, mom and pop, and when, you know, the payroll is actually like paid by a real person, you know, not an HR department. Okay. Mm-hmm. For example, we were talking about a $15 universal minimum wage a week or two ago. And one of our listeners, sent me some information about what a universal $15 an hour wage would be. And it, like on a Big Mac at McDonald's, it would only raise it 4 cents or something. Right. Mm-hmm. So, that got me thinking about it. When that sandwich shop that I worked at, they can only sell what they're selling at whatever the market value is. That's it. Right. So when something gets, when it's either a tax that gets raised or the requirement of what they have to pay their employees gets raised, that doesn't just translate into a sandwich being 50 cents a sandwich more. Right. If they want to stay in business, they have to be able to sell sandwiches and they can only sell them at a certain amount. So the idea of it just being of it just like passing through. And if you add an expense onto a business, the revenue side isn't just a given. It doesn't happen that way necessarily. Right.
No, not necessarily. But if you have become more skilled at making sandwiches, then theoretically you can make them faster and better.
Yeah.
Tastier and faster. So theoretically, if your output is greater, then unless there really are only 20 people who ever buy sandwiches and there is no waiting line, then you're right, you know. But if there's a waiting line, if there are more people moving to town who are buying sandwiches, or more people eat one of your sandwiches and go, oh my God, have you ever eaten one of Jake's sandwiches? Mm-hmm. Because they are the best, right? Then there is increased revenue because you're making better sandwiches.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not.
If you're the guy who's actually writing the check for these people, right? And mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. you know, this kid named Jake that he hired 6 months ago, and when he hired him, he had to pay him $7.50 an hour, even though he's only worth maybe $6 an hour, but he had to pay him $7.50 an hour. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, starting off at least in his mind, making more than what I was worth, you know? So, and you know what I'm saying? In his mind, I've mm-hmm. just kind of become, worth $7.50 an hour. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's starting somebody at a place that I guess it's a matter of, not really a matter of opinion, but a baseline, well, some baseline that yeah. was legislated.
Right, right. Legislated based on what a person needs in order to survive. That if you're gonna, so I get it from the small business owner's perspective. I ran a small business and I know what it's like to, you know, not be able to make payroll or come real close. But from the worker's perspective, I mean, from the people who are actually doing the work, they have to make a certain amount of money or they can't live. They can't afford to buy food. They can't afford an apartment. I mean, mm-hmm. Right? We have people here in Brookings that have had to move to Crescent City mm-hmm. to live because they can't afford to live here. And they're people who are, you know, making minimum wage or slightly above,
yeah. Yeah. No, I get it.
But it's rough. I mean, it's rough.
Yeah, I get it. And that's why my opinion isn't necessarily cemented, because it seems more and more evident that the stinking game's rigged. You know, it doesn't matter as much if I can just work real hard and bust my butt. You know, it's holy smokes. I mean, wasn't born with a silver spoon, you know?
Yeah. And that, unfortunately, yeah, that appears to be the thing, you know, that if you were born on the right side of the tracks to the right family in the right neighborhood, yeah. you know, you've probably got a fairly smooth sailing ahead of you, certainly compared to somebody who was born on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
In the wrong part of town, and you know.
So I would imagine is it typically Democrats that are pushing for the $15 an hour nationwide universal wage?
I would think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that would be my guess.
I can't see that being a super Republican thing, yeah.
because the reality is, I mean, and looking at it from either perspective and both perspectives is really a good thing to do. Because at the same time as you need the businesses to be in business, right? You've got to have the businesses working. On the other hand, if you don't have the people to work in the business, you don't have the businesses working anyway. And if the people who are working in the businesses are getting paid not enough money to have a life, then they can't buy things anymore. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just, you know, we pretend that we are not interdependent. We pretend because it just, you know, feels better to say, ah, I'm not dependent on anybody, you know. But the reality is that every single domino is, you know, teetering on another one. And if one of them doesn't work, the reality is the whole thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it may take a while for it to come crashing down, but it's going to, you know, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
I mean, I look back in history and, you know, you look at some of the other countries around the world where the whole wealth thing was just way out of kilter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't last forever. Eventually, the people, the vast majority of people who are not making it or just barely making it get fed up.
Yeah. After a while. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's what can drive the change in your political parties, you know.
Right.
That are revolution time.
Right. Which is kind of both same, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
In a lot of ways.
And I think that, you know, the reality is that particularly older people, as we get older, we get a little more set in our ways and we don't want to change. You know, we're comfortable with the way we finally figured life out, right? We think we have, and we're comfortable with it, and we don't want it to change, thank you very much. And I think we resist it. We resist that change. But the reality is that, you know, change is the only constant.
Mm-hmm.
Is the only constant. So, you know, I think we have to keep asking ourselves, what, you know, what's the best? What's the best and newest and improved way forward? Because it, you know, it's like when you're navigating a ship, right? Don't you have to keep changing your heading or something?
You've got to adapt. And the parties will do that too. And they have. And, you know, I mean, they better because, I mean, it's just, you know, things do change and people die and new people are born and things change, you know, things change.
Yes.
When you mentioned social, being a social progressive, you know, I was thinking of like social things like gay marriage or, you know, that sort of social, that aspect of a social ideology more so than like, you know, the financial end of it.
I think it all goes hand in hand, you know, that to just respect the individuality and dignity of each person, whoever they are, you know, whatever they are, whoever they love, you know, I mean, it's just all part of who they are. And now I was raised a Catholic, so, this does not go with my doctrine of being raised a Catholic,
well,
right?
I mean, they're getting pretty, I mean, Catholicism's pretty liberaled out now, right?
Well,
I guess it depends on your perspective.
It does. And it also depends on kind of where you are in that religion. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some of my classmates that I went to high school with are very right-wing Catholics and very, you know, Catholic. and I, you know, I sort of think that every human being has worth, and they have worth because they come from the creation, you know, and I define God differently than you do and differently than, you know, people in different faiths do. But I absolutely think that there is a guiding force, and that guiding force is what, you know, has this whole thing going, and I'm not quite sure how they, you know, keep all the balls in the air, but, and maybe that's what 2020 is, right?
Dropped one?
I dropped one.
Oh, I don't think so, but it does seem like that.
It does.
You won't hear any argument out of me for as far as, you know, just the basic value of a human, you know, and everyone is entitled to some foundational, you know, respect, and everyone's valuable. The social aspects of like gay marriage, that's something that I think that both parties, the Republican Party for sure. I think you'll see the Republican Party kind of the culture in that change to be more accepting of gay and lesbian and the, you know, marriage rights and marriage equality. I think that's only a matter of time, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the social, because it does keep changing, because we do keep moving, and the things that were outrageous to even think about 50 years ago aren't outrageous to think about.
Shrug. Yeah.
It's kind of normal. And I mean, that if you look back at slavery, I mean, that is a shining example, right? I mean, when this country, the United States of America, actually got started, that was a given, you know. Slavery was a given.
Yeah.
That they were not fully human was a given. And, you know, nothing could be farther from the truth or from, you know, the way it is now. Although, you know, there certainly are vestiges of that out there. But do you feel like, as a Republican, do you feel like you are you like strictly a Republican, or are you strictly conservative, or do you find that in your life there are places where you are not as conservative as maybe you once were? Or
I'm not strictly Republican, as in, only vote for Republicans and pushing the party propaganda. When I look at, you know, if I have to choose one of the two main teams, then I'll choose Republican. But not necessarily dyed in the wool. And when, you know, when I'm talking about my personal feelings, my personal beliefs of being a conservative and where moral lines are drawn, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate into legislation and you know, putting my moral obligations on you, Candace. So that's a disconnect that I have with a lot of folks on my side. In my mind, I mean, what you do like in your bedroom is stinking none of my business. And if you want to be recognized by the state and have some like legal protections and have some of the same legal privileges that I have being married to a woman, and you want to marry another woman or another dude, it's none of my business, one, and two, I don't really care. I mean, and my morals and my moral compass is not necessarily the country's moral compass. So I just,
yeah. And it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't. Right. I mean, in my mind, I mean, I've expressed to you and on my chats and stuff, the fact that I'm an evangelical, and there's a part of being, at least for me, part of my religious and spiritual views. Let's see. How would I explain it? It separates me from the world and the workings of the world. So there's my personal beliefs and morals that I hold, and what's right and wrong. That's for me. And you know, but that's different than what I would support being law of the land.
So can you, because I don't actually know what an evangelical is.
Okay.
Can you define it in some way?
Well, I mean, so really it's like a Protestant, right? So you,
really? Yeah. That's it?
Well, no, Protestant? No, that's not it, but you start with the whole pie,
right? Start there.
And you slice Protestant. And so that's like, you know, half of the pie. Okay.
Okay.
And so
okay.
Evangelical, I mean, I don't know if I could like define it out of Webster's, but evangelical being focused on, like, I guess, denominations that are evangelistic in mission, you know, as opposed to like the Catholic Church or other liturgical churches. It's not necessarily a...
Do you see this little frown here on my face? I don't get what you're saying. Evangelical, like that means you go out and preach? I mean, what is...
I don't. I mean, so there's, you know, the evangelical denominations would be most of the Christian denominations that aren't Catholicism or you know, Catholic... boy, I was going to say Catholic light, because that, you know, I know. And that.
L-I-T-E,
yeah,
light.
Yeah. So
yes,
like,
I love that.
Episcopalian, you know, some
right,
kind of
right,
real
right.
staunch Lutherans too, that it's kind of like it's Catholic light. So.
I love you. I absolutely adore the phrases you come up with. They are just priceless. Yeah,
I didn't mean to let that one go, but so you're, you know, the, assemblies, you know, Baptists, I mean, I'm trying to think if Presbyterians are considered evangelicals.
I'm going to have to look this up, because I'm really, this is very interesting to me. I mean, it's just a whole different world. See, as a Catholic, I wasn't allowed to attend your churches.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's that about? And see, yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, funny from a... so from the perspective of a non-religious or non-Judeo-Christian, you know, background... You would view like Catholicism and Christianity as just like this one big, you know, one big lump, where in the world of church, in the church world,
So
big difference.
And never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
So I guess I would claim, you know, just Protestant, I suppose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Protestant. I'm not sure why I always use the evangelical term, but because I don't preach on street corners. I'm not an evangelist.
I had not noticed that lately. No.
Yeah. Not so much.
So it sounds like you've got some maybe liberal leanings in you, at least in terms of letting people be who they are. I mean, that seems like a kind of a liberal, doesn't it? God, like I'm sorry. Am I like painting you with
I mean, there's a lot of conservatives that would agree with me, and live and let live, let people be. It's just live and let live.
Right. So I think that's great. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with that. So you and I agree about that.
Yeah. And I knew there would be plenty that we would agree on, even if we were both staunch Republican, staunch Democrat. When we start really talking ideals and the way we think the country should look, there'd be a lot of similarity.
Right. And I think that part of the problem is that we... you know, we use labels as shorthand.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Right? And it's not, well, we've talked about how, you know, we don't communicate very well as a species anyway, but using that kind of a shorthand doesn't really get you very far when the other side, the other person that you're talking to, doesn't have the same definition for that shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I say Democrat to you, you've got an idea based on your life experiences, your how you grew up, the teaching and everything else. You have an idea about what that means, Democrat. And if somebody says Republican to me, you know, yeah. I have the same.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as your definition, right? It's just
right. Yeah.
It's not. And I just, yeah.
It's usually the fringe that kind of defines the whole, you know. And when you say a Democrat, when I think of Democrats, I think of the ones that stick out that I've seen and heard on TV, right? And they don't, you know, they don't necessarily represent the Democratic Party. It's the one that is on the news clip, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like typically the fringe.
Right? Yeah. It's so you've got the far left and we've got the far right, and you know, what we used to have was a big group of people in the middle who were centrists, basically. They may have leaned a little left or leaned a little right, but they were basically centrists. And that was the negotiating that could happen to get bills passed and that kind of stuff, was that they did not differ that much, and it wasn't about labels. You know, it wasn't,
yeah.
They were building bridges, kind of like you and me.
Yeah. My, how times have changed, though.
Oh, my word, I know. And my, how time has flown, because you see that little blue.
Old Tomas.
Oh, yes, Tom is letting us know that we're just about out of time again. So we talked about like half of the stuff I wanted to talk
about.
Yeah,
that's all right. It's a tough one, and like feeling like you know, you're put on the spot to represent, you know, the party, you know, Candace, go ahead and tell me what Democrats think, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Every bit of it. Yeah. And don't make a mistake, because they're listening. Right? Well, we'll talk some more next week, of course. And I would like to talk about wealth and you know, where it's concentrated and kind of what that means for the rest of us, because that may be a really important thing to talk about.
I'm gonna look it up.
Good. Yeah. For you,
I mean,
buddy.
I don't know. There's a lot of names that are coming to the top of my head of some very wealthy people that I know aren't Republicans.
There we go. All right. Well, thanks again, Jake. This was wonderful. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And thank you for joining us. Remember, you can hear our previous shows at podcasts on our website, kciw.org. And we welcome questions and comments. That's kciw.org. Our station is completely volunteer run and financed, and your participation as a volunteer or as a contributing member keeps us on the air. So thank you. See you next time on Building Bridges on KCIW, your community radio station.